If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch. It's made with only 6 simple ingredients. Plus, Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day hassle-free trial. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
And I had to leave at 9:25, and I remember I'd gone out the night before and I kept pressing snooze, and I remember thinking, you know what, Leo, if you can't get up, if you can't get your ass up and go to school for the reason why you left everything in Australia, because you're too busy going out and partying or doing, you know, trying to experience this other side of New York, not the real reason why you've come here, then you just accept it. For the next month, you go, you party your balls off, you do it, and then you get on a plane and you go back to Australia. Or you make the decision and you make the choice now that you show up for yourself, you show up for what you came here to do, you give it your all, and then you see what happens. And that really was the moment that really changed my life. Hey guys, I'm Leonardo Nam. I currently have a show called Maggie on Hulu, but you may know me from things like Westworld or Sister of the Traveling Pants or my first movie, The Perfect Score.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand spanking new episode of Off the Beat. And would you look at that? It's me, your host, Brian Baumgartner. Today, as you just heard, we are going to be speaking to the truly amazing Leonardo Nam. Now, you may know Leo as Westworld employee Felix Lutz, or currently as Dave on Hulu's new hit comedy, Maggie. Now, so interesting about Leo. He was so sure that he wanted to be an actor that he traveled across the world, literally, to sleep on a bench in Central Park. That's right, New York, concrete jungle where dreams are made of. That is where he got his start. And now he's been on so many incredible TV shows and movies. After starting performing Shakespeare in Shakespeare in the Park, where he slept originally, he's gone on to star in The Perfect Score, The Fast and the Furious, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, even, where he was cast originally by The Office's Ken Kwapis. And I'm told that some of you may be excited to know that he was once featured in Steve Aoki's music video with BTS. So there you go. I thought it was pretty amazing. You should go and check it out. With all of that said, let's get to it, shall we? My new best friend, Leo Nam.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
What's up, Leo?
Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm excited to be on your show. Hey, thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks so much. Your accent right now is really, I wasn't sure what accent I was going to get.
You got the accent, mate, not me.
I mean, you're from all four corners of the globe.
I am a little bit.
You were born in Buenos Aires.
Yes.
To Korean parents. You grew up in Sydney. That's the accent I'm hearing. And then to New York. This is, you're Mr. International for sure.
Well, it does feel nice to hear someone repeat to me like, oh, where I've lived and what I've done. You know, most of that stuff, by the way, you know, mate, was like not by choice.
Right.
It's not like I was like, you know what? I'm going to decide to be born in Buenos Aires. You know what I mean? Like, nudge me over there, you know?
Well, I was an early adapter and passionate fan of Westworld when it started. Every Sunday night was sending tweets about how it was blowing my mind. And obviously you played a pivotal role in that. But I do want to go back to start with your childhood. I mean, obviously an incredibly diverse background. When did you move to Sydney from Argentina?
We moved when I was 7.
Okay.
I believe. We started to kind of make the trip when I was about 6. And yeah, got to Australia right at the end of first grade, I believe, is when I started school there.
What do you consider yourself besides international man of mystery? Are you Australian? What do you consider yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I am Australian, like culturally.
Okay.
You know, I relate to people most as being an Australian. And I think a lot of that comes from, you know, my formative years being in Australia. And Australia has this sensibility about themselves where you're Australian first.
Okay.
You know, more than anything else. And so you're Australian and, you know, whether good or bad, you know, people have different perspectives about that. And I certainly, you know, do myself, but I do love that quality about Australians that you're Australian, like first and foremost. You know, Australia also has like this tall poppy syndrome aspect where, you know, everyone's the same and you're like, and if one starts to pop out, you cut them off. but yeah, I'm Australian, Korean, and American. And those are kind of the big key ones. Argentinian is, you know, when you look back at my life, yes, I definitely am Argentinian as well. But other than, you know, other aspects, small aspects of food and some aspects of, you know, culturally how I relate to other people is Argentinian. But, you know, ultimately when someone first meets me, what I believe I present first is Australian.
Right.
And that's how I feel most comfortable when someone relates to me that way.
How do you think that your background there, your history, helped shape you into who you are?
Oh, great question. You know, I feel like the whole idea and concept of an immigrant is all I've known.
Okay.
And so the idea that you're not of this country, but you are this country in that you're living here now, you're contributing to this country. And so I think that that concept of, you know, my parents being immigrants in Argentina and then being a double immigrant then going to Australia, I think that really that put a sense of hope and possibility in my life. You know, one thing that happened in Argentina was the Falkland Wars were happening, and it was kind of a moment where my family realized that, you know, shit's going down right. in Argentina. Right. So my aunt married an Aussie, and, you know, in process of getting married, my grandmother then was in Australia and was saying, hey, this is definitely a place that is not, you know, in the midst of war. And it was in the kind of in her understanding of Western culture, you know, there was an exodus, you know, from Korea. At that time, it was very much a third world country. And so looking to move to the West, you know, their first stop was Argentina. And then along the way, you know, the Falkland Wars happened. So then they moved to Australia. But I feel like because I came from a family that has moved around and have always been able to find their feet no matter what, I really connect to a sense of hope that I believe is possible. You know, like growing up, did I see anyone that looked like me on screen? And no, there wasn't. There was maybe one, you know, that was the idea of Bruce Lee, but that was even during my time, he was dead.
Right.
And so there was no one that was actively telling stories that looked like me. But I do think that it was because I had family that did immigrate and immigrated twice and really carved their own life in their own way for their family, for me, for it really does has instilled in me a sense of hope. I really believe that.
That's so interesting to me, because I, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm the opposite, right? I mean, I'm from the South of the United States, right?
Yeah.
And most of my family have lived in that region from the kind of the lower Midwest to the deep South. I mean, me moving to California was a big deal. I mean, that was a trip. That's like a totally different country from down there. But
yeah. Did they think of you as a betrayer? Did you like betray them betray maybe a too strong of a word? But
you know, I mean, I traveled around and did theater quite a bit. And I guess there was a sense of come back here. I mean, not so much from my parents. My parents were very supportive, but I think there was always that sort of idea of why are you somewhere else? Now, I'll tell you, now that I'm in Southern California, my family likes to visit here. So I was going to say they
want to be, they love that you're here.
Yeah, so there's kind of a free pass from this little island here. But yeah, but that idea of not being too far from home. And I don't know, I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but your experience having started so early on that journey of finding a new place, finding a new identity in some ways in a new place, and that your family had done that so often that becomes second nature. And I do think we do live in a global world now. And the idea that you have been or had experiences and family and in so much of it is awesome. And I love the idea that brings hope to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That there's, yeah. There can be a rebirth.
But I feel like anyone that strikes out on their own, right? Like you did and what have you, I feel like we have this camaraderie of hope. We have this camaraderie of belief in humanity and striving for the best life that you can. And I love hearing that you've decided, you made the choice to, like, you know, get out of the town that you were in and made it to Southern California no matter what. And I have to say I'm in the same way. You know, we're just traveling showmen.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We go where the work is.
So you arrive basically end of your first grade year to Australia.
Yeah.
When do you start to get a thought of being an actor?
You know, I feel like it kind of started in when I was in sixth grade. There was a sense of performance that started to come into my sphere. My brother's a choreographer. He was older than I am, and he had to kind of navigate his way through as a dancer at the time. And he was very much involved with that dance world. It was more hip hop and that kind of stuff. But then we were also involved in church.
Okay.
And there was a Korean church kind of, you know, they do these performances about why this is a sin. Okay. To instill fear in you, right? And then I was like, oh, I can get into that. Let's do that, right? And we would perform and do these, we'd write these plays and stuff and about, you know, someone robbing a convenience store or, you know, bashing an old lady and why that was bad and what happened. And then, you know, the devil comes in or what have you, right? So we had these really like wild stories. And I really kind of enjoyed that. But the next step from there onwards was I was part of a public speaking after school program.
Okay.
And the after school program happened to have a ballet school that was part of it too, and also a drama side to it. And I remember going in, and originally I was part of the public speaking program. And I remember I did rather well, and I kept like not winning. I was like second place or,
right,
you know, just great job, but you know, you just didn't get it. And I remember the teacher, Miss Hopwood, she said to me, you know, Leo, you're either so passionate or you're so technical and you need to find a hybrid. And she said, maybe what would help you is if you did some drama.
Okay.
And so she gave me King Lear at 12.
Right.
I did the Edmund speech and it blew my mind. It blew my mind that I thought, oh my goodness, like someone has written this from, you know, yonkers ago, and I relate and resonate in some weird way, even though I'm saying these strange words, but I kind of get this feeling. And so that kind of was the key that unlocked it for me. And so after that, I then started to join a theater troupe, and I went to an all boys technical high school in Australia. There was no drama.
Okay.
And I started that. I started a theater club at school. And then because of that, I ended up doing my, I guess what you would call your SATs. But in Australia back then, it was called the HSC. But I did that in drama. And in the process of doing that, I found some wonderful lifelong friends. And, you know, us theater geeks and, you know, feeling awkward and weird and trying to find ourselves and all that good stuff, right?
Right.
I found my jam of people. And within that, I also found my jam of people that were very ambitious and very focused and were really reaching for the stars and you know, were writing musicals, were writing plays, were writing films in high school. So I joined that crew, that community. And because of that, I connected with an agent in Australia who put me in touch with someone that's still my mentor to this day, Annie Swan in Sydney. And she really was the one, if I can attribute the idea of craft and the respect of craft and class, really, you know, you know, being able, right, to have taste,
right,
and,
right,
discernment. And she brought this concept of elevating my world. And so that's kind of how that bug happened for me. And then from there, the leap to New York happened.
Yeah. I mean, I had a similar situation myself when it changed for me, and it sounds like at roughly the same age where I realized that this was not just an activity, but that this was something deeper. And I was involved in a program similar to what you're talking about, where it was like, oh, I see.
Oh, everyone has that. Oh,
yeah. Like, oh, there's so much more to this that I want to know about. And you decided that to pursue this, you needed to be in New York. So I understand at 19 years of age,
yeah,
you moved to New York,
yeah,
to study acting. I hear you spent a few nights in Central Park.
Yeah, mate. I mean, I had no money. I mean, I had $300 in my back pocket and a credit card that didn't work. And I thought, hey, this is a good idea. Great idea, guys. Let's just go up and leave. Let's do it. And I just had that vision and the ambition, you know, to go for it. I landed in New York, and I remember the only thing that I knew about was Broadway, Times Square, and Central Park. And so at that time, I remember walking through Times Square, just looking at all these billboards, being like, oh my God, you know, I've made it. Here I am, you know. And then at like 2 a.m, you're like, where am I going to sleep? It didn't click for me. I was like, where am I going to sleep? I don't know. All I had was the audition date, you know, at that school. And so there was a cab driver that drove me around for a little bit. And he offered me some weed, which was really funny. I was like, what? Like, yeah, but what's going on? Like, okay. I ended up, staying at Central Park near Columbus Circle. And it was in the middle of summer, and so it was hot, so it didn't need anything. But I remember, like, you know, talking to some people that were there that were, you know, experiencing homelessness themselves. And they were like, they gave me ideas, like, you know, if a newspaper, why do they use that? So it, you know, keeps them warm somewhat and what have you. And so I didn't need that, thank God. But the next day I was like, right, Leo, you gotta pull it together. This can't happen.
Right.
I should actually say I did have a place to stay, but the person that I was supposed to stay with, at least for the first couple nights, didn't pick up the phone when I called.
Oh.
And so there was this sense of like, well, I'm here, maybe they'll pick up later. And that's why at 2 a.m. I was like, oh my God, where am I going to sleep?
Okay, this makes me feel better, because I was like, you got off the plane and you haven't thought about anything? All right, this makes it a little better for me.
No, yeah.
Okay.
I should have prefaced it by saying that.
This makes it a little better.
He happened to be a flight attendant, and so he had to take a trip. And so that's why he wasn't available. And so that's the whole reason why I experienced that.
Okay.
And so then after a week of this, then he finally picked up the phone and then I was able to stay.
Okay.
After a week.
If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Not only did Zyn create the first ever nicotine pouch, we're still America's number one choice for smoke-free, spit-free nicotine satisfaction. It could be because Zyn is made with only 6 simple ingredients, including naturally derived nicotine salt. Or maybe it's because Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day trial. For anyone worried Zyn won't cut it like traditional tobacco, just ask one of the millions of people who have achieved lasting change. You have lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. That's zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
So you mentioned there you had an audition at, you said, the studio. Now, is this HB Studio?
Yeah, HB.
Goodness. So for those of you who don't know, HB Studio basically was training all of the best actors in New York City for years and years. Mm-hmm. My favorite book that I studied, I never met her. Uta Hagen's Respect for Acting.
Yeah.
I studied that at school. My favorite book still to this day. It's in my office still here. You obviously, you have to be doing something there or be connected to the right people in Australia for you to even get an audition there. So you get accepted?
Yeah, I got accepted. Yeah. And it was to be in Uta's class, and so I really, you know, was desperate to be around the best. And so I remember what my mentor in Australia had said, you know, when you meet someone and you see that their work is excellent, work with them. Do whatever you can to say, I'm going to work with you. I'm going to work with you. I'm going to work with you. And so really deciding and to take that road of studying and being in her class really changed my life. It isn't the most, you know, prestigious school and what have you. It's more like the working man's school, you know, even though the alumni is like Al Pacino, Cynthia Nixon. I mean, Barbara Streisand, it goes on and on and on. But it's because they welcomed everyone and they believed everyone should have access to this kind of work. And so I made the decision pretty early on, actually, to only work with the best. Because when I first landed there, all I wanted to do was just party.
Right.
I was like, I'm in New York City. I can't believe this. Oh my God, this is great. This is fantastic. This is fantastic.
There's weed from the cab drivers. This is
from the cab driver. Like, what are you talking about? I've made it. And so I remember actually pretty early on, I was in a class, in a Shakespeare class with Jeffrey Owens, who was teaching, you know, legendary guy. It was a 10 a.m. class. And I lived in the East Village and the school is in the West Village. And I had to leave my house by 9:25 thereabouts. Mind you, I had like a red mohawk at the time. And I got to school on rollerblades.
Right.
Even in the snow.
Right.
I mean, hello, crazy Aussie. Just like, coming through, guys, coming through. You know? And I had to leave at 9:25. And I remember I'd gone out the night before and I kept pressing snooze. And I remember thinking, you know what, Leo, if you can't get up, if you can't get your ass up and go to school for the reason why you left everything in Australia, because you're too busy going out and partying or doing, you know, trying to experience this other side of New York, not the real reason why you've come here, then you just accept it. For the next month, you go, you party your balls off, you do it, and then you get on a plane and you go back to Australia. Or you make the decision and you make the choice now that you show up for yourself, you show up for what you came here to do, you give it your all, and then you see what happens. And that really was the moment that really changed my life. Not only did I decide right there and then that I would make the commitment to myself, to the work, to, you know, the platform that's been given to me at that moment and for the rest of my life, what I would be doing. But it also made me realize, like, what are you doing sleeping on the floor, Leo? Like, get it together.
Right.
Get it together. Like, yeah, at the beginning it was sure, it was fun. Yeah, whatever. I did this. I slept here in the park. Yeah, whatever. You know, and I kind of imagined that I'd go back and say, hey, back in the day, this is what I did, you know, like, but then in living it, I realized like, nah, don't want to do this, you know,
right.
Like, get your finger out of your ass, Leo, and let's go.
Right.
And so that really was a big turning point for me. And then after that, it was, you know, every week figuring out how I work, how other people work. And I started to take a lot of ownership of my own discovery of what it meant to be in my own craft, what it meant to feed my own beast, and what my beast likes to eat.
Right. Right. That's so awesome. I love that story. Are you starting to work outside of the studio at this point? How does that transition start to work for you from doing the work, putting in the effort, and then also starting to play other roles?
God, I love that you're making me connect the dots from back there. Because it's a mixture of magic, really. It's a mixture of like when you show up for yourself, right? And you show up for yourself and you don't know what's going to happen, but you show up with the belief in yourself and you show up with the work on your craft and the respect for it, then other things start to fall into place. And so one of the things that happened was I met someone that was like at a cafe, and it was, you know, definitely one of those moments of like, you know, everyone's drinking coffee and like they got berets and like it kind of felt like that. He wasn't wearing a beret, but you know what I mean? Like
right.
In the East Village,
right.
Tompkins Square Park, like all that stuff. And someone had told me about like there was an abandoned school and that a friend of theirs was going to put up a production, a Shakespeare production. And he thought it was going to be Hamlet, but he wasn't sure. But back in the day, there was, it still is around now, Backstage, right?
Right.
And so that's where a lot of people would get, you know, their auditions, especially when they're starting off. And it was a non-union project. And so I would scour that all the time. And I found that one posting. And so I connected the dots. I went back to that dude at the cafe and was like, hey, you know, is that the guy? And blah, 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 blah. And then I went off and I auditioned and I got the role of Osric. And I played Osric as a drag queen on Rollerblades.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Follow me. Yeah. Stay with me.
Yeah. No, I like it.
Because the director and I were chatting about, you know, what it is that he wanted to do with the production. And, you know, and I love that stuff. I love someone being like, yeah, let's flip the script, like the script. Let's do it. Let's figure out how you are going to add value to this production. And so I had shown up in Rollerblades. I can't believe that. With a mohawk. And I did the piece, you know, first of all, without Rollerblades. But then I said, hey, you know, I've got this idea. What do you think if I do it like this? And like I said, it was an abandoned school. And so I would rollerblade around as I would do my audition and then the speech. That ended up being part of the show. And so that was my first kind of transition into doing work and being paid for work. And it was still at the time that I was still sleeping on the floor.
Right.
And so there was one night that I was like, I'm going to sleep here in the theater in this abandoned school because it made more sense for me to be there. I didn't have to be anywhere, you know. And that's kind of my first moment of realizing like how much it fed me, how much doing this kind of work in the most obscure, strange way, but yet magical for me. Everybody else may be like, you know, horrified, but for me, it was so magical to connect those dots. And that kind of was the turning point for me. Because then after that, then I was like super hyper-focused on getting into Shakespeare in the Park and super focused on trying to figure out what I needed to do to have longevity in this business. And so from there, it went off and I got Shakespeare in the Park, 12th Night. And I really enjoyed that audition process. I really enjoyed that, the process of rehearsal. I thought that I'd made it. I was like, I've come here to do Shakespeare in the Park in New York, conquered. Here we go. Yes, I'm, you know, spear carrier number three.
Right.
But I did not care, you know. I mean, there was the possibility of understudying someone, but I was like, whatever, I've made it. Here we go. And then at that same time is when I got my first film audition. And the film audition was for a movie called The Perfect Score. I'd done one indie film before that, but this was my first kind of bigger
audition. Is your first film audition, The Perfect Score?
Yeah. Yeah, my first real film audition. The one before, like I said, was like an indie film, a New York indie film that kind of, you know, was more of a homegrown project. This was my first like, hey, this script is done. This has been financed. You know, here we go. My first Hollywood film, so to speak.
So his first audition, he ends up landing the role in The Perfect Score, cast alongside Scarlett Johansson, Chris Evans, Erica Christensen. What kind of a moment was that for you?
Oh, you know what? It was a moment like, I swear to God, it felt like I was in Fame. Like, I swear, I shit you not. So I'm at the Public Theater, right? And I am, like I said, I'm like so chuffed. I'm like, yeah, man, I've made it. This is so great. And I go to the bathroom and I see 13 missed calls. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, and mind you, how I got the role was, so you know when I said, hey, I learned how to feed my beast, right?
Right.
I started to be open to the receptors of that as an artist, like what can feed me, you know, new perspectives. And I'd never done yoga. So I go do yoga and I had auditioned already. I tried to audition for this role. You know, I'd scoured the breakdowns of all the auditions. I'd scoured backstage. I'd learned that every movie needed to have a film permit. And they got film permits by going down to City Hall. And so from there, you were able to find out the phone number of a production. And there was a name so you could call and you would be able to call someone.
I love this.
I mean, yo.
I love this.
Yo, I was like laser focused.
Yes, I love this.
Yeah. And so anyone out there, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can do it, man. Anyway, so I find out about this project. I'd heard about The Perfect Score. They were looking for, you know, a character that was originally, you know, just a teenager and then assumed as a white character. But I submitted. And then it came around again a couple of months later and it was, you know, an African-American guy. And then nothing. And I submitted again. Then it said a Latino or African-American. Or white. And then it said open ethnicity. And I was like, guys, I've got to fall under that. Like, come on, right? I'm purple. You know? And so then at that time, I go to that yoga class and someone I just got to know that was just happened to be next to me. And she is a baby print agent. Okay. And, you know, you go to have tea or hang out afterwards after yoga. And that's how I discovered that. And so I said to her, you know what? There is this audition that I have been trying to submit for. I think that they would be more receptive to it if it came from under the banner of an agency. And she's like, you do realize it is literally for babies and for print, for baby magazines. That's what she does. And I was like, I don't care. Just go for it. And, you know, she submitted me and I got in.
That's amazing.
But anyway, so then... Yeah. God. So she calls me like 13 missed calls. And I was like, what is going on? So I hear the voicemail and she says, hey, after class, come meet me. She's like, you got the role. They're talking about offering you this three picture deal and this and that. And you know, I'd never experienced any of this stuff. I was like, what does this even mean? Right. And so then I go out there and at the Public Theater at the time, there were these glass doors. And with a railing on it. And I went up to her and I just kicked open the door. And Astor plays like kicked open the door, like, you know, like, oh, I made it. Here we go. So that was my experience. It was super wild, man. And, you know, I've got to say, like, I went through a bit of a crisis at that time because here I was, someone that had gotten my dream of being in part of the Shakespeare in the Park production. And I thought, for life, I'm just going to be doing theater for life. Then I get this movie. And it's, you know, an ensemble role, and it's one of the leads. And I was so torn. So I went to go see Heidi Griffith and Jordan Thaler at the Public. They were the casting directors. And I said to them, you know, like, oh, my God, I feel so sad that I had to tell them this. And they were like, are you crazy? Like, what are you talking about? Like, oh, sweet child, what are you talking about? And they really put it into perspective for me. They were like, Leo, you know, you're spear carrier number three, and it's wonderful that you are part of this, but no one is going to go see an Asian Hamlet. They're just not going to see that. Wow. They're not going to go see a Black Hamlet. They're going to see Denzel Washington as Hamlet. Or they're going to see Leonardo Nam as that. That's the perspective you've got to start to look at. And I thought, oh, shit, okay, I'll do that. And they said, go off and do that. Go do the movies. Go do these things that you need to do. And then come back. And then play this. And I thought, right, that's what I'm going to do. So Heidi, if you're listening, I want to come back.
That is so awesome. Oh God, I love it. By the way, did the baby print agent take 10%?
Oh yeah. No. Oh yeah, she took 10%. Let me tell you. And I remember actually I brokered my own deal. I was like the one on the phone with business affairs, you know, being like, yeah, okay, well, hold on, please. And then I put them on hold as if like I'm my own assistant.
Right.
And then there were the other baby print agents, and I'd be like, what are we going to do there? Oh, this much. What does the schedule F mean? They're like, I don't know. And I was like, we're like, just double it. We did literally went in and said, and just tried to double it. We were so like, just went for it. It was great.
That's awesome.
Didn't get it, but I learned that you have to ask.
You have to ask. This movie sends your career in an entirely new direction. I do have to mention, the next year he gets cast in The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants with, notably, my old boss, co-worker, Ken Kwapis.
Oh, yes!
Yes.
From the pilot.
Yes.
Of Office, yeah.
What an amazing guy he is, huh?
What an amazing gem he is. I am so grateful that, you know, he is such a kind and gentle soul with, you know, fantastic, you know, ability and taste, really.
Right.
I mean, he cast me.
Right. No,
and he cast you. What are you talking about? No, but it was a mixture of not only Ken Kwapis, but also Deborah Martin Chase, the producer of Sisters of the Traveling Pants. It was a, you know, based on books, pre-existing books, and the role was written as a blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy.
Right.
And it was because Deborah Martin Chase had seen me in The Perfect Score, you know, she really, and Ken had decided that, you know, there is opportunity here to expand the story and to really delve in deeper, and what would it be like if I came on board the film. And it's fantastic. I mean, the Sisters of the Traveling Pants audience, the fans are just, you know, fanatics. They're wonderful. They gave me belief and hope in myself that the industry would want to see actors and characters like me. And it made me believe that, you know, even though something is written a certain way, if you get wonderful minds together, then a whole new world can be cracked open. Little did I know that not everyone thinks like that.
Right.
But, you know, and I was very lucky early in my career that I was kind of helped along by people like that. And it really, you know, set my career in a new track because of that.
You know, you talked early on about not seeing a lot of people that looked like you in mm-hmm. film as a kid.
Mm-hmm. That spoke English. That was a big deal too.
Right.
That spoke English, that lived in a world like mine.
Right.
Having experiences like mine. Sorry, go on.
No, do you think that this opportunity in Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, do you think that mm-hmm. began to maybe crack that door open a little bit for other Asian actors and mm-hmm. for viewers as well to see a more diverse canvas, if you will?
Yeah, you know, it's, I have to say that, you know, throughout my career, people have, you know, consistently come up to me and talk to me about how impactful it was to see my face on the poster of a movie. People would be like, oh my God, like, I never knew that we could have our face up there. I never knew that. And there are people in this industry that have come up to me and said, oh, because of seeing you in that, I have now decided to take on this career and what have you. And Sister of the Driving Pants also did do that. And I'll give the example of just how one mind was changed. So, you know, as you can imagine, people were they were rabid fans of the book, you know, obviously as to why they made it into a movie. You don't want to mess with like 14-year-old girls, man. Like 14-year-old girls, when they fall in love with something, like that is it, mate. Yeah. Like you better watch out. And I had no idea. And so I remember when I did the film and I would get this fan mail and not always fans because I remember this one girl wrote to me and it was in like, you know, bubble writing with like, you know, love hearts over the eyes and that kind of stuff, right? But it was vicious. It was like, I don't see you as this character. You don't look like him. What makes you think that you can play him?
Wow.
You're ruining this, like that. And I just was like, whoa. And it was really kind of a strange feeling. I was like kind of looking over my shoulder being like, oh my God, is this 14-year-old girl going to be the one that like, is it her? But then actually the film came out and that same girl wrote to me and she said, I'm sorry that I said that. I saw the film and you were wonderful in it. You know, you made Brian more than what I thought he was going to be. And, you know, that basically now that she was a fan and on board. And I remember being like, what? Wow. Like this random person, their mind has been changed. And I think so. I think it did change people's minds after that. A little bit, I have to say, you know, it must have, I think.
Yeah.
If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Not only did Zyn create the first ever nicotine pouch, we're still America's number one choice for smoke-free, spit-free nicotine satisfaction. It could be because Zyn is made with only 6 simple ingredients, including naturally derived nicotine salt. Or maybe it's because Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day trial. For anyone worried Zyn won't cut it like traditional tobacco, just ask one of the millions of people who have achieved lasting change. You have lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. That's zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
You continue on a number of roles. I want to talk a little bit about Westworld. I was so blown away by the story, first of all, and the potential, I don't know, political or geopolitical ramifications of this created world, the class and money and control and... Were you given the opportunity to read the script before you auditioned?
No.
Okay.
Hell no. Are you kidding me?
I figured
I'm
not.
So far down the totem pole.
Right.
But I did know, very early on, you know, I've been very lucky to have people in my corner that, look at me as I think, an actor, as an artist, as someone that can create a character. And so there was the casting director, John Papsideri, is someone that has, you know, for the longest time would bring me in on things, you know, someone that reflects back to you, like the idea that, you can possibly play these roles.
Right.
Like I'd always be like, you think I can play this role? Like, wow. Very like, I was really flattered, you know,
right.
Like every time it would be a role that I'm like, what? Wow. And so when this role came around, you know, I was in down in the dumps in regards to the industry, and I had a really hard time, you know, trying to find and reinvent myself. You know, people had seen me for so long as only like a young teenager, and then again with the industry, there just wasn't a lot of opportunity for people that looked like me. I turned down other roles, and little did I know that in turning down those roles, there would not be other lead roles that for people that look like me. It just didn't exist. And I kept being like, no, I don't want to do that stuff. I want to do this kind of work. So ironically, in a way, the lowest point in my career where really in this really hard place that I was at, this little gift came in again from someone that has the vision like John. And they asked me to come in to play this role of Felix. It was just called Lutz at the time. And he gave me an idea and a breakdown of what the story is and just a little bit of information. And he basically said, you know, come in and, you know, go nuts. Go do magic. And what I've always loved about going in to see people like John Papsideri and other fantastic casting directors or producers or directors that think in this way, they always have me in the room with other random types.
Right.
You know, there was like a 60-year-old, you know, African-American lady, and I are going in for the same role, as well as, you know, a 40-year-old, you know, Latin guy. And we're all going in for the same kind of particular role. So I go in for the audition, and it's a whole bunch of different people. And I just was like, oh my God, oh shit. But what I wanted to really play with this character and I thought would be really interesting is that this guy that is just finding in himself his own awakening. One of the questions that they're asking was the evolution of sin. And I just thought, oh my God, wouldn't this be, I just kept getting this image of like a dove. This guy was like a dove in this theme park.
Hmm.
And so this whole idea of like pure and innocent, and then this awakening of this dove that then has to go out there and like, you know, I don't know what he's going to have to do, but like this innocence and then just this birth that happens. And so taking that with me, and then also the name in itself, Lutz, I was like, oh, it's like Lutz and Lutz of love. Like, and so I kind of started to play around with this whole concept of, you know, having an awakening about love. And in this world where, you know, they don't have love, or this idea that they don't know how to feel love or what that is, that I have that. So that's kind of what I tried to hold on to as I went through the audition process. And I didn't get access to the script. And even while we were filming, you know, for the first season, I didn't get access to the script. I'd just be called in for the scenes I needed to do, the days I needed to work. All the stuff was blacked out around me. So, you know, I knew that it was written, but literally nothing, could see nothing.
Wow.
And so I was the guy on set where, you know, we'd do these rehearsals and the writers would be there and I'd be like, I've got a question. You know, why does it say he grabs the doorknob? They're like, because he's got to leave. I'm like, but why did you write that? Like, why can't he do this? Why can't he do that? Why can't he push it? Like, I would just always be that guy that's asking all these questions. I'd be like, I'm sorry, I have to, because there is no access to any other parts of it. And so many times they'd say, I wish I could tell you. I wish I could tell you. I just can't. But if you feel that, you go for it. You just go for it. And then the director will reel you in and that way. And so that's kind of how it started. And every time I would go into set, two things would happen. I needed to have an entry point each time. And so I recognized that after we did the pilot and there was like a 6-month break and then we, you know, started shooting the series, that it was going to be really sporadic for me. And so I was discovering opera at the time.
Okay.
And it was just something that I happened to stumble upon, then started to use opera as my way into play Luck.
Interesting.
Getting into Westworld, because I needed to have a feeling of change. Everything just changes, the vibration. And so we shot in Santa Clarita, it took me 40 minutes to drive up there. I would listen to opera and it would be a way of changing everything. And then I would receive the script and go in with that mindset.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's interesting too, because the show itself and some of those early scenes in the lab, is that the right word?
In the lab.
In the
yeah.
lab?
Yeah,
I
in
guess,
the lab.
The lab.
Yeah, in the body shop, they call it.
The body shop.
The body yes. shop, yeah.
Yeah, kind of have an operatic feel to them in a way, and your preciseness of movement within a world of robots, basically, is very interesting. Fascinating.
Thanks, man. It was, you know, so much of that first season, everyone was asking, am I a host or am I a human?
Right.
And, you know, I didn't know. The creators wouldn't tell me either. They said, just play this scene. And these are the boundaries. And there's, you know, and this is what we're talking about. But one thing that I will never forget is that Jonah would always say to me, Leo, this is entertainment. All of this is happening and all it, but at the end of the day, it's entertainment. You've got to entertain. And so that was the way I interpreted that was everything that you do on screen has to be breathtaking, has to be super hyper-focused, because the scenes that we did were super quiet.
Yes.
Were very quiet and they could be very boring and they could be, but I needed to find something that would heighten it. And so that also to me was the reason why I used opera as well, because it's life or death, you know, like everything that this guy that Lutz was doing was life or death. I'm a target. Or what I also saw was I now see humanity and love in something else that I've never seen. And so then that is the awakening for me. And once you see that, you can never unsee that. So that's what I held on to as I was filming.
Awesome. I love that. Nominated for a SAG Award for Outstanding Ensemble for a drama series in 2017. That must have been fun, right?
Oh, man. It was so fun. And I've got to say, like, it was so wonderful. I worked, you know, a lot with Tandy Wei, and her leadership is something I'm never going to forget. Like her lovely way of including everyone, of really kind of cheering on everyone. And so when that nomination came by, I remember she called me and she said, "We did it. We did it." And I was like, "Wow, like what are you talking about?" Right. But just her way of, really kind of bringing everyone in and saying, no, it was what we're talking about, like this evolution of sin, these themes and that what have you, that stuff bled out onto the set. Like we would talk about humanity. We would talk about what it means to be human between ourselves, in between takes. We would talk, I was just having kids at that time and she had kids already. But we would talk about, you know, what it means to now be in the presence of another soul that is here. And I was just trying to figure out what's happening.
Right.
You know, like I was like, what's going on? I'm having kids. This is crazy, you know? And so a lot of that was also like involved in the scenes. And so it was so wonderful to hear when she called me and was like, "We did it. It was wonderful." It was great.
That was awesome.
It was a great feeling to be part of that.
In 2018, you hosted HBO's celebration of the Asian Pacific American Visionaries Showcase. How cool was that to be a part of that competition and that celebration?
First of all, it's wonderful to know that HBO was backing something like this, right? Where they're looking for to give opportunities and give breaks to people and specifically people that are of the AAPI community so that they can learn to, in a way, make refined work. Because if you haven't been given an opportunity over the years, you don't know how to keep elevating the work. And so it was really important for me to, and I was so flattered that they invited me to be a part of that, because I then started to connect with new filmmakers. And it's wonderful to be a part of that. It kind of gives you fresh eyes again, in that same way of, you know, when I played Osric for the first time, or I was like, "Oh, this is fantastic. Wow, so passionate about this." That it was so interesting to be on the other side of that and to see these filmmakers that are new, that are, you know, just like bursting out of their skin, just wanting to tell these stories and pouring their heart into it. It was great. It was super wonderful. And it continues on, you know, the HBO Visionaries. I can't wait to see what they're going to do next, man.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you feel a sense of responsibility in terms of representing both the Asian American community, the LGBTQ communities through your work? Or do you feel like you're just a guy playing a character? Like, how important is it for you, your identity, or is it for you just about the work and trying to normalize those aspects of yourself?
You know, it's a really interesting question that I hope we can continue to be asked over the years, because I think it's going to change. So back in the day, when I first started, there was no way that you could be someone that is out, that is gay, that also that is a non-white male as the lead, telling these non-white male stories, because everything was centered around that. Now, I feel like there is more space for stories to be told that are focused on other narratives as well. And my responsibility within that is to be the best actor that I can be, to tell the stories, to give life and breath to those voices that would otherwise be unheard. But I also recognize that I am in a position where I do need to say something by the very being of who I am. Mm. And part of that journey for me has also happened in becoming a father. My journey in being a father and finding my voice in a community that has been underserved and underrepresented, and to normalize that, is part of now my journey too. So it's kind of a two-pronged thing that happens. You know, for the longest time, I was only of the thought that you do your work as the actor and nothing else can come into it. You, by your very presence, is political. That's it. That's your power. And now I feel like it's shifting and it's changing. And definitely you, by your very nature, that still is very much true, is political. by the very nature of who you are in that role, doing the work that you do, bringing the life that you do. But I also recognize that we have now, because of technology and these different platforms, these other opportunities to be the face of or to represent another part of the community. And it's important that we do, I think, because it's important that we keep showing these different facets and sides of a community that has never been seen and has been marginalized. So I now do take more responsibility of that. Part of that responsibility is now turned into producing projects, you know, that where I now see opportunities that, like the HBO Visionary Awards, where I started to get access to these young filmmakers and these storytellers, where I now am able to say, oh, actually, that's so interesting. I resonate with that. I can connect you with these other people to hopefully make space in the entertainment industry for that story. So I think it's only going to keep growing. But I do hope that we keep asking this question, and in another 10, 15 years, it'll be different.
Right.
It'll be different. It'll be evolved. Who knows what?
Yeah. I love that you've gotten into producing and you're accessing those young filmmakers that HBO is highlighting, and isn't that kind of the point? So that's awesome. I can't say goodbye without mentioning Maggie, your new show on Hulu with my old pal, Angelique Cabral. very different, by the way, than a lot of your other work. Romantic comedy is very different than Westworld. I know you play Amy, played by Angelique, her fiance. She is a psychic. My question for you is, are psychics real?
Oh, yeah, I think psychics are real. Let me tell you, man, like, there are so many times that someone has said something and then it happens. That you're like, that's weird. Some people are just more in tune with that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like, they can say, I feel like this is going to, and then it happens. And I'm like, well, that's a little crazy that, you know, every time you say it's going to happen, it happens. Like, so I've met people like that.
Right.
But yeah, you know, doing that role on Maggie was like such a interesting muscle for me to use. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to swing into comedy, and I wanted to swing into something that didn't necessarily have to be a network show or, you know, a streamer show, but I knew I wanted to play in the comedy space. And once I started to read for Maggie and that started to become a reality, it was such an interesting brain shift for me. You know, I'd never been in a show that's an episodic show. Like, I'd never done that before, and it's a different beast. And the way that the comedy rooms are run, and also we shot it during COVID, so it was also another weird experience.
Right.
But I've got to say, I really enjoyed it. I really loved that I stretched myself to play that, and I hope it was funny. I hope it was really entertaining for people. And yeah,
I think Maggie is so fun and so great for you to show a different side of yourself. You know, you and Angelique together, both, you know, amazing in your own ways. Seeing the two of you playing together is super, super fun for me.
Oh, thanks, man. It was fun. It's fun to play. It's fun to play with her. Fun to play with everyone on that show. And I've got to say, I love that, you know, when I came on board that show, that they were really into the improv.
Oh, there was a lot of improv. Yeah. Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah. I was like, great. Let's go, you know? And then I had to learn the boundaries of that, you know?
Right.
I was like, oh, okay.
You
know?
You are so delightful and so interesting, and I wish you nothing but the best coming up. I know you've got a bunch more projects. You come back and talk to me when Hummingbird comes out.
Oh, yeah.
And I look forward to speaking with you again and to continue to watch your career. I'm a big fan. So thank you so much, Leo, for
thanks,
coming.
Thanks, man. I'm a big fan of yours, too.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Cheers, mate.
Leo, thank you so much for stopping by today. It was so great to get to know you and to hear your story. I can't wait to see what you come out with next. And to you, listeners, thanks for tuning in to another episode. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your week. Don't forget to follow us on @OffTheBeat. And please go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Make a comment, something. I can't tell you how much that helps us. And with that, I will bid you all, in the words of Shakespeare, adieu. I don't know if that's Shakespeare or not, but we'll see you next time. Off the Beat is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Ling Lee. Our producers are Diego Tapia, Liz Hayes, Hannah Harris, and Emily Carr. Our talent producer is Ryan Papa Zachary, and our intern is Sammy Katz. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend, Creed Bratton, and the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.